Good morning, everyone. Hi. We have a lot of seats in the front row, and we feel kind of far away from you guys. If you would like to move up, we'd love to have you move up a little closer. But wanted to say welcome. My name is Michelle Baskin, and I'm with the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, Office of Communication. I'm absolutely delighted to be the moderator this morning. This session is about the San Diego County measles outbreak and talking about what communicators can learn from this experience. Very pleased to have two wonderful presenters from San Diego, and actually very pleased to have Marianne DeLee here with us. She's arriving in from Bangladesh, so it's about 11 p.m. her time right now. But we're very glad that she was able to make it in today to share her resources and her data with you today. Marianne completed an applied epidemiology fellowship with the Centers for Disease Control and the Council of State and Territory Epidemiologists, at the County of San Diego Health and Human Service Agency and at the San Diego Quarantine Station. She has previous experience in avian and pandemic influenza program development and management. And she has additional experience that includes the evaluation of infectious disease surveillance systems, investigation of infectious disease outbreaks, including measles and other outbreaks. And currently she serves as an avian and pandemic influenza technical coordinator with CARE USA in association with the CARE CDC Health Initiative. So please welcome Marianne.
Good morning. First, I'd like to pause and give note that the authors do not report any associations which represent conflicts of interest. I'm here today to speak to you about childhood immunization perception and practices. First, I'd like to give a background on parental vaccine concerns. Many parents have concerns about vaccine safety. Concerns include questions over dangerous constituents, namely aluminum, thimerosal, and formaldehyde. Additionally, these concerns in exposure to these vaccine constituents are believed to result in adverse events, including autism, ADD, ADHD, inflammatory bowel disease, and asthma. As a result of these concerns, parents often modify administration schedule, including delaying initial vaccination, spacing vaccinations, and splitting conjugate vaccines for single antigen receipt. Additionally, parents may selectively refuse certain vaccines based on the fact that they believe these vaccines may be risky. This results in intentionally under-vaccinated children. Parents may also choose to refuse vaccines altogether, resulting in completely non-vaccinated children. In January of 2008, an intentionally unvaccinated child returned to San Diego from Switzerland, incubating measles. While infectious, the index case attended a school with a high rate of personal belief vaccine exemptions, PBE, where under-vaccinated and completely non-vaccinated children converge. The index case also presented in four different healthcare settings. After two generations of transmission, a total of 12 children became infected, none of whom were vaccinated with a measles-containing vaccine, nine of whom had parents who held personal belief exemptions on their behalf, and three of whom were less than 12 months of age. Subsequent to the outbreak, a post-outbreak response was initiated to describe vaccine administration and refusal practices, explore household trends surrounding vaccine administration and refusal practices, and to investigate a potential association between parental characteristics and perceptions surrounding childhood immunization and the immunization status of the household's youngest child. We chose to look at the household's youngest child because we believed that it provided the best indication of current perceptions towards childhood immunization. A mixed methodological approach was applied, including a series of community focus groups and key informant interviews surrounding childhood immunization. Main themes from these community focus groups and key informant interviews informed an online survey of perceptions and practices towards childhood immunization employed among two online parenting networks. I will disclose information regarding the methods of each of these in future slides. Before we go any further, I would like to stop and note the definitions that I will be, the terms that I will be using in this presentation. A fully vaccinated child was referred to as a child whose parent indicated the child had received all vaccines recommended thus far. A selectively vaccinated child was a child whose parent indicated that the child had received only select vaccines recommended thus far, including parents who were accepting only specific vaccines, parents who were spacing vaccinations, and parents who were splitting conjugate vaccines for single antigen receipt. A completely non-vaccinated child was referred to as a child whose parent indicated the child had not received any vaccines recommended thus far, including those who were delaying initial vaccination and those who were refusing vaccination altogether. An under-vaccinated child was therefore comprised of the selectively vaccinated children and the completely non-vaccinated children. The youngest child here referred to the youngest child in the household under age of 18 years. For single child household, we referred to the only child as the youngest child. We'll begin with the community focus groups. For the community focus groups, we recruited outbreak-associated families and additional fully vaccinating, selectively vaccinating, and completely non-vaccinating community volunteers from throughout the county of San Diego. Community focus groups were organized based on the exemption status of the participants' children. So for instance, parents with personal belief exemptions would speak about issues with similar parents holding a personal belief exemption, and those who were non-exempt were discussing issues with non-exempt family members. These focus groups were moderated by two behavioral scientists, and they lasted 60 to 90 minutes. We asked participants to complete an anonymous, self-administered survey to obtain participant demographics. Major themes were derived from audio transcripts. As you can see here, participant demographics were similar with regard to sex, age, education, income, race, marital status, median number of children, and occupation. None of these were, there were no significant differences between the exempt and non-exempt group on any of these characteristics. Main themes from the PBE group included skepticism surrounding government, pharmaceutical industry, and the medical community at large. This group generally believed that vaccination was not necessary because diseases were eradicated and there was no perceived risk. Disease incidence decline was attributable to improvements in water, sanitation, hygiene. There were few complications with vaccine-preventable diseases, and the complications could be treated by the U.S. healthcare system. Natural immunity was preferred, and these children were protected by natural lifestyles. Parents in this group also perceived vaccine risk, including induction of immune system damage from administration of conjugate vaccines and numerous vaccines given at one time. In addition, immediate and long-term health conditions were also concerning. In general, non-exempt group indicated that vaccines were beneficial and protective. They did, however, note concerns over exposure to under-vaccinated children, particularly in the classroom settings, in community settings as well, where immune-compromised children and pregnant mothers were exposed to under-vaccinated children. This group also desired stricter regulations, including disclosure of the number of PBEs attending schools and stricter requirements for obtaining a PBE. Both groups indicated concern over vaccine constituents and components, recommended immunization schedule, and administration. Both groups also noted an increase in popularity of the topic, particularly among new mothers. And members of both groups also discussed that a modified schedule permitting vaccine splitting and spacing may alleviate some of these concerns. A willingness to cover additional costs to have titers drawn for immunity prior to administration of subsequent doses was also discussed in both groups. Now for the online survey. We used the community focus group themes to inform a self-administered anonymous web-based survey, which was pilot tested. We engaged members of two online parenting networks, and all members with email accounts on file were invited to participate, one survey per household. There was a 5-week data collection phase from June 10th through July 16th, 2008. We asked participants to utilize a 3- and 4-point Likert type scale to scale their agreement on particular prompts. We also asked multiple choice questions and additionally had open-ended questions to obtain information about vaccine information sources and concerns regarding vaccine constituents and health conditions. For inclusion in the analytic sample, the participant must have completed the survey. A refused response was fine to have completion. We also had to have the parent indicate the youngest child's vaccination status because that was our outcome of interest. We used descriptive epidemiology to look at 3 levels of the outcome of interest, including fully vaccinated, selectively vaccinated, and completely non-vaccinated children. We dichotomized the outcome of interest for bivariate and multivariate analyses. For bivariate analyses, we looked at parental characteristics and perceptions, the difference in proportion of parental characteristics and perceptions between under-vaccinating and fully vaccinating respondents using chi-square tests and Fisher's exact where appropriate. Multivariate analyses indicated an outcome of interest of 46.4%, which was common, so we therefore used ProcGenMod log binomial regression. Eligible indicators included independent variables obtained from questions that were prompted to all respondents. We utilized a logic, a navigational logic, so for instance, if a respondent answered no to one question, they would then be taken to another question for the next logical question. So we only looked at independent variables for inclusion in the model that were asked to all respondents. We assessed model diagnostics and multicollinearity. 1,642 email addresses were maintained between the two sites. 256 surveys were initiated for an overall response rate of 15.6%, though this was believed to be an underestimate because the addresses were perhaps not maintained well by the system. They could not, the networks could not provide information if they were the most up-to-date emails. Survey completion rate was 92.6%, and four participants failed to disclose vaccination status. The final analytical sample was 233, 91% of submissions met both inclusion criteria. And now we'll look at the youngest child's vaccination status. You can see here that over half indicated a fully vaccinated youngest child, 33% of respondents indicated a selectively vaccinated child, and 14% indicated a completely non-vaccinated youngest child. As you can see here, the fully vaccinated, selectively vaccinated, and completely non-vaccinated children had parents who had similar characteristics with regard to relationship of the respondent for whom the child was answering on behalf of, age, education, and the median number of children. The respondents did differ, however, with regard to income and race. Interestingly, here we see the fully vaccinated group had a higher proportion of those with an income greater than $100,000 per year. We also see here that the selectively vaccinated group had a higher proportion of white non-Hispanics. These were significant at an alpha equals 0.05 level. Looking at planned vaccination status, we can note some important things going on with this graph. For the fully vaccinated group, we see that although the youngest child may be fully vaccinated at this point in time, parents were questioning continuation to full vaccination, and there were also plans to discontinue full vaccination for some fully vaccinated respondents. We can also see for selectively vaccinated parents, some of them were also questioning continuation to full vaccination, and some had plans to continue to full vaccination. So just because a parent started out on a particular route, particularly between the fully vaccinated and selectively vaccinated groups, did not mean that the child would end up actually selectively vaccinated or under-vaccinated in the end, or fully vaccinated in the end. We can also see here that the completely non-vaccinated group is fairly steadfast in their beliefs. With vaccine administration practices, we see here, not surprisingly, that fully vaccinated, the most commonly cited administration practice included neither splitting nor spacing. Interestingly, though, 17% indicated antigen splitting only, 12% indicated both splitting and spacing, and 5% indicated vaccine spacing only. Among selectively vaccinated, we see that the most commonly cited administration practice was both splitting and spacing, followed by neither splitting nor spacing. Now you may question, what does this mean exactly among a selectively vaccinated group? Essentially, this means that this group was administering on schedule, but they were only choosing select vaccines. They were completely refusing certain vaccines based on their perceived risk of that vaccine. 12% of this group indicated antigen splitting only, and 8% indicated vaccine spacing only. For household vaccine refusal, we see a trend here. As household size increases, some level of vaccine refusal also increases. In intentional spacing due to personal beliefs, we see also that there is an increase in intentional vaccine spacing for personal beliefs with an increase in household size. And for household spacing trends among intentional spacers, we see that increasing level of vaccine spacing was the most commonly cited among this, among two-child and three-child households. And we also see that a consistent level of vaccine spacing was the second most commonly cited. And but we do also note decreasing level of vaccine spacing. This was particularly among those who noted a medical exemption on behalf of at least one of their children. The main reason for behavior change among households with increasing level of vaccine refusal was a perceived adverse or harmful event in an older child among both selectively vaccinated and completely non-vaccinated groups. There were 71 unique health conditions of concern. We've grouped them here categorically based on affected system. But as you can see here, there is a little variation between fully vaccinated versus non-vaccinated groups. Also, if you note, there are some similarities, though, however, with global development disorders and neurological symptoms and disorders falling high. There were also 38 concerning vaccine constituents or components. And it's important to note here that many of the components that were listed, and the reason I use that term component is because they were not actually constituents, and some of the components are not actually included in the vaccine itself. But as you can see here, thimerosal, aluminum, and formaldehyde were the top three for both fully vaccinated and under-vaccinated groups. Seeing here that the animal ingredients, products, tissues, and DNA are also included in the top five of both the fully vaccinated and under-vaccinated groups indicates there are also ethical concerns on behalf of both of these groups as well. The recommended immunization schedule and administration was concerning, particularly among under-vaccinated, with a higher proportion of under-vaccinated parents reporting concern over recommended vaccine schedule. This is the same with too many vaccines in the recommended schedule, too many vaccines being administered at once, multiple vaccines or a belief that multiple vaccines should not be combined, multiple antigens should not be combined in conjugate vaccines, and a belief that titers should be drawn prior to administration of subsequent vaccine doses. Physician influence. It was interesting to note that the healthcare provider influenced decisions regarding vaccination with among 51.9% of the under-vaccinated group. However, there was a statistical a significant difference between fully vaccinated versus under-vaccinated group, with a fully vaccinated group having a higher proportion, indicating provider influence. And as you can see here, listed below are the influence that the physician had or the healthcare provider had on the decision to vaccinate. On multivariate analysis, we looked at under-vaccinated versus fully vaccinated. Parents who had a child who they split and spaced vaccines for, those who believed that vaccine risk was greater than disease risk, those who believed that it was better for society if children experienced natural disease, those who had a child 4 to 6 years of age, and those who believed that natural lifestyles are protective had a higher risk of having an under-vaccinated child when compared to fully vaccinated. Limitations. We use convenient sampling, so our results should not be generalized. We had a fairly low response rate, although we believe that this may be an underestimate of the actual response rate. There was possible misclassification of vaccination status because we asked the mother to, or the, the parent to make a classification of the child's vaccination status, and we did not validate this with immunization records. We utilized a 3 to 4 point Likert type scale, which a 5 point Likert type scale is often used, and that allows for more variability in responses. The respondent's interpretation of terms is also a limitation, as recommended vaccine schedule was left up to the parent to decide how they wanted to define that for themselves. And there was no exploration of predictors of behavior change for household trends. In conclusion, parents' decisions to vaccinate and the extent to which they do so are multifactorial. And individualized risk-benefit assessments were often used among parents. Really, there should be a shift in paradigm regarding vaccination status. The status falls along a continuum and not into definitive camps of under-vaccinated versus fully vaccinated, because people are utilizing different administration techniques also. And even fully vaccinated parents are having concerns. Providers influence fully and under-vaccinating parents' decisions to vaccinate, and understanding concerns of under-vaccinating can help shape counseling and messages for all. Finally, it is recommended that public health practitioners provide transparent and understandable information regarding vaccine constituents and potential vaccine-associated health conditions to create and target risk communication messages regarding immunity against vaccine-preventable diseases and concerns about vaccines, and to utilize social networks and alternative forums for dissemination of public health messages and vaccine information. And we would like to acknowledge now the following people, particularly David Sugarman, who provided much technical support throughout this project. Thank you.
Thank you. I think
that since there was a lot of data presented here, we're going to stop and see if you all have any questions for Mary Ann specifically on what she had just presented. I have a couple. Okay, Uno, go ahead.
Thanks for that excellent presentation. I'm Kathy Herman from the California Department of Public Health, and I just wanted to let you know that we recently have just posted all of our immunization rates by school on our website, and we think that will may be helpful, may won't not be helpful, but we're going to be transparent and put it up there. We have the data. But also, in California, we've certainly collected PBE data, personal belief exemptions, which are very easy to obtain in California. However, we haven't collected what that means. It's a dichotomous variable. Either you have a PBE or you don't, and we know from the San Diego outbreak when we went and looked at records at the school that many children who had personal belief exemptions were vaccinated with some vaccines. So we're now doing a selective survey in schools to determine what does a PBE mean. Does it mean fully unvaccinated? Does it mean specific vaccines are being refused and so on? And in future, we would like to collect that information from all schools. It will be somewhat difficult because it's a lot of data collection, but hopefully it will help us to understand what's going on.
Wonderful. Do you have plans to, once you have that information, to post that as well, along with the rates, the school immunization rates?
I think we could post all of it. It might be technically a bit complicated, but we can consider doing that.
Wonderful. Great, thank you. Next question.
Hi, thanks for a great presentation. It was really interesting. And I'm sorry if I missed this when you were explaining the survey of the online parent groups. Were those national websites or were those specific to the area? I mean, I know obviously, you know, that you know anybody if they're on the internet can get on, but were they sort of directed more towards San Diego?
I'm sorry, I actually forgot to mention as I was presenting, but these were both San Diego-based online parenting networks. However, we did ask for a residential zip code, mm-hmm. and we noted that many, I believe it was at least 34 respondents, resided outside of San Diego County. We noted many on the East Coast, actually. And that's why one of the recommendations was to utilize parenting networks to our advantage. Because they are being people who are establishing these networks and perhaps moving away are still maintaining contact so that if there is something happening in one area of the country, we can't necessarily assume that those perceptions are just within a particular geographic area, really with parental networking groups and social networking groups in general. We're seeing that you can have far outreaching messaging, dissemination of messages among those groups.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm just sort of curious about, I mean, I've been thinking about trying to do something similar, but thinking about something like iVillage or something where you have a more national perspective.
Great question. I actually have a follow-up to that too. I'm wondering how you gained access to those specific groups and how you found them and then what was the process to gain access and if there was any lessons learned you could share with us on that.
Sure. Well, actually I also forgot to mention, to describe them a little more, the two online parenting networks, one was a natural family network, which included families who were promoting natural lifestyles, including organic diets and breastfeeding and co-sleeping, many of these pillars, anti-vaccination. Although not all members of the group, there was much variability, and even the members we talked to, there was much variability within the group with regard to personal beliefs about anti-vaccination and the extent to which a particular individual in the group may be against vaccinations, but we did actually have buy-in from our index cases parents who were participants in this natural families group, and many of the outbreak-associated parents were actually members of this natural family group. We gained buy-in from them, and they posted a link on their network site, and so that's how we could get a lot of responses through that. Our second parenting network site included a network that was sponsored by a local hospital, and from that site we saw a range of parental perceptions, including fully vaccinating, selectively vaccinating, and completely non-vaccinating parents coming from that group as well.
Thank you. Next question.
Okay. My name is Hadassah. I'm from Massachusetts. I have three short questions. One, I don't remember what date your survey was done. Was it before the outbreaks or after? And if it was before, are you planning to repeat it after there is a lot of information in the news about the measles outbreak? That was my quick one. My second question is, you gave a data that about 50% of under or not vaccinators say that the provider was their main source of information. We know of providers who themselves have some beliefs, that anti-vaccine beliefs. Did you check who were the providers, to which kind of group they belong? Because otherwise it kind of seems either very resistant parents or poor communication between the provider and the parent. And question number three, are you planning any intervention with those group of parents that you have met?
Sorry, for the first question, the data collection phase was from June 10th, 2008 to July 16th, 2008. The outbreak occurred in February of 2008. The index case returned to San Diego in January, the end of January 2008, and the outbreak occurred in February of 2008. So the survey was implemented after the outbreak. With regard to your second point, the 50% of those who were non-vaccinating and their influence on the providers, that wasn't the primary source of information. It was just there was a question of whether or not a healthcare provider influenced a decision to vaccinate. We did not actually specify in that question. I think there were we learned a lot of lessons about exactly how we should have specified certain definitions in the survey. We did not specify whether this was an alternative healthcare provider, such as a chiropractor or an alternative medical doctor or a homeopath. We didn't ask that. So those results need to be interpreted carefully. You're absolutely right. And for your third point, I actually believe that Karen Waters Montijo would be the best person to answer that question, as she is the chief of the immunization branch for the County of San Diego. So.